Checking in with State Representative Tacky Chan of Quincy, who is busy in his office on Beacon Hill today. Hey, Tacky.
Hey Joe, welcome to Budget Week. This is a bright Thursday morning on the April 25th, and I'm in the office today for those who can actually see me on YouTube and QATV Access.
That's right. I forget that sometimes people just listen to us rather than watch us, which is pr way better way to watch me anyway.
Well, I love the YouTube podcast where I'm listening it in the car because I can't, I just don't have to always watch it. And there's like visual charts or something involved, and obviously you can't see said charts while you're listening to the podcast. So it's always like amusing to be like listening along. It's like I know there's a chart, but I can't see it, or there's a graphic, or there's a background silent video that you're talking about, and I'm like, okay, well this is odd.
You have to use your imagination. But
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
actually that's why I always ask you to, give out your contact information for that very reason.
Oh, well, it's free. You should just record that once and just play it over and over again at the end. It'll be a little quicker.
No, I want to make it as easy as possible for people to reach you.
Well, they have been. I'll tell you honestly, they really have. I mean, this is a budget week at the State House. I said last week we took Monday off of Passover and started budget on Wednesday, and we're actually in day two of three. We fully expect to have the budget debate complete by tomorrow. At some point, I don't want to hazard a guess. Yeah, people are writing in, calling in, postcarding in some cases, their requests for budget amendments. I regret that I cannot sign every budget amendment, to be honest with you. We kind of start running out of time as we get closer to the budget debate because we have to sort through so much paper and emails and other phone calls. I mean, you got to remember, folks, you get like stuff people drop in the mail or drop to the office, plus you have to sort through the emails, plus you got to sort through the call list.
Right.
It's very decentralized. So, the email is actually the newest part of our lives relative to the totality of this world. So, now you're just like categorizing emails, and then you got to, sort through all the papers, advocates, and then, like I said, people could call in and the phone rings and people start just taking messages, and we take your amendment numbers and your home address and your name, and we try to, start trying to sort out. Then we have to find the amendment, read the amendment, know what the amendment actually does, because we can't always rely on the advocates to be the sole definitive explanation, because I like to actually know what we're getting into. And that takes time. And unfortunately, sometimes we do run out of time and just can't get to them all.
Right. So, yeah, I have a preliminary breakdown here from the Speaker's office. So, $57.9 billion budget proposed for fiscal 2025, including $500 million for the emergency shelter system and $555 million for the MBTA.
Yeah, those are not the biggest budget busters, if you can believe it or not. I mean, our biggest budget buster is Chapter 7 education local aid to cities and towns, and the direct local aid, which is the money we give, basically free money for lack of a term, for cities and towns, which amounts to well over $40 million for the city of Quincy, and composes the actually those are the number two, number three, the biggest budget busters are MassHealth, Medicaid,
How
and
much
so.
is that offhand? Do you know roughly, Tacky?
It's offhand, it's over $20 billion. I got
Okay. Yeah.
offhand. Do I? Oh, I do. Hang on.
Sure.
Ta-da! I leaned over. I have a better number right here, folks. Give me one second. You got let's see here. The state pension liability gets 4.5 billion. The MBTA without the extra money from the managed funds get 1.5 billion. The Massachusetts School Building Assistance Program gets 1.3 billion. That's how we got Central Middle School, Quincy High School. The renovations have been approved for Squantum School. Those are
Southwest Middle School, too. Yep.
some of the older school systems. School buildings have got renovations over the years, including Walls School, Montclair School, and several others. So that's not surprising. Local aid, when you consider Chapter 70 money, is about 6.863 billion. So 6.863 billion, give or take, for the Chapter 70 education. And if you throw in the local aid unrestricted money, which is 1.283 billion, and if you throw in charter schools, supplemental educational assistance funds, money to help cases where you have new transfers into school system midterm, homeless transportation, regional transportation, regional school districts, $9 billion goes into education
Okay.
and local aid. So it's pretty substantial.
It is indeed, yeah.
And then we're gonna flip here to healthcare.
This information's, public, right? So folks can see
Oh
this
yeah,
if they
you can
want.
find it yourself. It's just I got the cheat sheet because they gave us the what do you call it, the highlight reel. So let's see here. Mass health spending. Yep, I was right. Over $20 billion. Mass health spending is the single biggest line item at $20.8 billion. So it's about a $51 billion budget. Your healthcare as you hit Medicare, Medicaid age is a match between the state and the Fed. So we're a 50% match, as well as Medicaid and Medicare. So your mom or dad or perhaps yourself is an assisted living facility, that is MassHealth slash Medicaid, Medicare. And so we come with 50%. So our project is 20.77 bit, 20.778 billion.
So it's over a third of the total state budget.
Yeah, and
Yeah.
this is fixed costs.
Right.
I mean, as I like to tell people, I mean, you want to cut the budget, so I want to cut the biggest number. All right, let's go after number one. Let's go after Mass Health. And people are like looking at me, it's like, what do you think is our aging population, which is true, and people like my mother and perhaps your mother and father and your grandparents, or perhaps yourself, is reaching Medicare, Medicaid slash Mass Health. I mean, I combine them because Mass Health runs all those programs, and you have Medicare on the side as you grow older, supplement Medicare Part B and so forth. But the state does contribute, half those costs. And people always talk to me about this stuff, and we can't deficit spend, as I like to say, and this is one of our big fixed costs. Another big fixed cost, as I talked about, is Chapter 70 plus the unrestricted local aid, which is $9 billion. So that's just in the edge of $30 billion or $51 billion budget.
Yeah.
So I mean, and you start to lose a lot of space as you go along, because once you roll in, the pension liability, you roll in the school building assistance, you roll in the MBTA funds. I mean, that adds another $7 plus billion. So, now looking at $37 billion out of $51 billion, that's a fixed cost.
Right. So there's not a lot left there to cut after you're done with all that.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest with you, once we add in things like the prisons, you add in the debt service we have to pay, the discretionary part of the budget is well under 30%.
Right. So, does this include the new millionaires tax revenue, Jackie?
Yeah, that's rolled into the discretionary component, but that's discretionary, not discretionary, right? Because that has to go to transportation and to education costs.
Education, yeah.
So we didn't do exactly a 50-50 split. We gave a little more side to the transportation. I'm sure we're going to get some flack for that. Our conference committee is going to have to iron that number out.
Yeah.
But it went to transport. I mean, most of that money on transportation from the millionaire's tax, as you just said, is going to it's going to MBTA.
Yep. And almost 200 million to regional transit as well.
Yeah, those of us in Greater Boston don't have regional transit. Those of us outside of Greater Boston have regional transit, which is transit run by municipalities or regional government as a cooperative to provide mostly bus transportation inside a set of community, smaller communities or within a small slash large community, depending where you are in the state. So,
Right, yeah.
being in Quincy, we don't experience that. But if you come from outside of Quincy, or moved to Quincy and came back and lived in one of the other regional communities, whether regional transport or localized transport, the state supplements that through the regional transportation assistance program, plus any town money, the taxpayer town residential property tax money of that town would pay for that, plus any kind of grants they could find on the federal level. So,
Right.
for example, like I was in Acton, I think my mom's an eye doctor, and I saw a regional transportation bus in Acton. It's a free transport for the small town. I'm sure it's not 24/7 by
Right.
any stretch. But I mean, that's a combination of state, local, and whatever grants they can find to operate them. And the Berkshire is much more important. They don't have a rapid transit rail. They don't have giant bus depots like we do in Greater Boston. But you talk about trying to transport people like in 30 towns.
Right. Yeah. No, they have, the private companies, Greyhound, Peter Pan, what have you. But yeah, they're solely reliant on that service.
Yeah, and it's much more limited service. I know people want like 24-hour MBTA, and of course we live in a dense urban area, so we have a different thought on the matter. But in our more rural areas, they really have much more daylight type service. Basically a working hour, so to speak, service. And honestly, they probably could use longer than working hour services because even in rural areas, they don't have typical 9 to 5 jobs anymore.
That those days are gone. It's a 24-hour society we live in now, for sure. I'm thinking of the Cape. There's the Cape Cod Regional Transit Authority. That's right closer to home is the Brockton area, the Bat bus. So yeah.
Yeah, and as you can imagine, as you all know, the vast majority of electeds do not come from Greater Boston.
Right.
The vast majority of electeds come outside Greater Boston. They don't. Taxpayers in those parts of the state see no reason why they should fund the MBTA. So I hope people do appreciate the fact that while we are a super majority, a Democratic state, there is regional interest and local interests which do not align to the local interests you may have here in Quincy. And this is kind of the debate that we have on Beacon Hill among our colleagues. We're trying to find a balancing act where everybody comes home with their needs to ensure the constituencies are satisfied or at least less angry, depending on the circumstances, I guess. So very different from Washington, D.C., very different. And also very different from municipal government, where even big communities like Quincy and Boston and Cambridge. Yeah, there are neighborhood issues, and city government is trying to balance out the different interests of different neighborhoods. But I mean, I'm trying to balance out, the fact that taxpayers literally in Pittsburgh get zero value from the red line.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. So if everybody's just a little unhappy, then you've done your job.
Well, let's not encourage more unhappy than I need to this job. How's that sound?
Yeah. Oh, speaking of unhappy,
Oh,
I hate
good.
to
You had me
speak.
smiling for half a second. Thank you, Joe.
Has there been any change to the local to the Chapter 70 education formula? Because I know here in Quincy, the mayor's upset with the city's reimbursement rate.
Yeah, the reimbursement formula was redone back actually during the pandemic. We voted for a whole new Chapter 70 fund in 2019, actually. And then we had to suspend it during the pandemic because we didn't know if we were going to have any money. So that's why the form was actually was delayed for one full fiscal year. And then, the city got a huge bump of $8 million plus dollars immediately from the formula change. And then the formula would kick in and they would it'd be adjusted based on all the different factors associated with number of enrollments, size of the population, projections on revenue. It's a lot of crazy factors involved, but it is not a guaranteed, $8 million jump every year.
Right.
I mean, I don't know what possesses people to think that's like what's going to happen every year. But I mean, it isn't as substantial, obviously, as it was in the past. But it is going to continue to rise, as you heard. It's the one of our major parts of the budget, and we fully expect the overall size of it to go up 10 to 20% every single year.
Wow, okay.
It'll move around based on different changing circumstances of different school districts because we know school districts are not static.
Right. Yep. Okay.
So as things change, you'll change too. But like I said, we're on a balanced budget up here because we can't, as you all heard about things like 9C cuts already happening this fiscal cycle, which means that we can't overspend. And while we do have a hefty rainy day fund, we have forewarned folks at the local municipal level that thing the gravy train is over, folks. I mean, the COVID money is basically expended. The city got a substantial amount of COVID money as well, beyond the state assistance, and a lot of these local these grants that we got from that money is all gone, and we're relying on the federal money, the infrastructure money coming through. In particular, is something the state's very interested in leveraging, and all municipalities are looking to try to leverage that as well with the state. So, but it doesn't really address the basic operating budget, and we got to tighten your belt. How you got to manage that out, and you got to be foresight in the matter. I mean, we have a bond cap, as people may be aware of, right? It's adjusted by CPI every year, And we do have a debt cap. I mean, it's not like the federal debt cap. We don't keep running against it all the time,
Just
but
print more money.
yeah, we don't print more money. Trust me, we stay under the debt cap. And you know, we also have about probably 2.2, $2.5 billion in annual borrowing. And we try to keep our debt loads under 5% of the budget. And it's not easy. I'm going to tell you guys, it's not easy because, as you all guys appreciate, the infrastructure of the state's not very good. It ain't. We all know
Oh,
that.
roads and bridges are in tough shape. Yeah.
Yeah, but that's bond money. And the
Yeah.
more we borrow, the more it hurts our debt service. And construction is not cheap. Materials are not cheap. So, you know, it's a very challenging component to prioritize. And we talked a couple of podcasts back, you know, that you know, we approve Chapter 90 money in the House, which is now currently waiting in the Senate, where the city will get over two fiscal cycles, approximately $2 million, give or take a little. You know, for local roads and bridges, the state will pick up the debt. And you know, I just talked about school building assistance funds, right? You can get 60 to 90% reimbursement depending on circumstances and your application. Well, that state picks up that debt on behalf of the city. You still have to come up between 40 and 10%, depending on the project, on your residential tax dollars on the city bond. But you know, we will pick up more than 50% of cities and towns' debt service through the school building assistance program, because that's the debt service we're paying on your behalf, so to speak. So, you know, as I say, you know, once you start adding it all up, you know, how much the state is participating in the city budget, you know, it'll clear $60 million pretty easily. It's a $400 million budget. So folks, please remember that. I mean, this is something that the speaker, you know, Bruce Ayers and John Keenan, people don't seem to appreciate or realize exactly the amount of effort it takes for us to, you know, to be a major part of your budget, to try to help the city out, so it helps try to reduce your property taxes or keep it from going faster, higher, by, you know, using the state monies, other taxpayer money to supplement. And like I said before, you think someone in Pittsfield cares about the fact that their tax dollars has come to Quincy?
No,
Or,
they
you
do
know,
not.
Orange, Mass, or Fort Worth, or
Right.
Dartmouth, or, you know, Florida. There is a Florida, Mass.
Yep.
You know,
A
the
new Braintree.
Braintree, you think those guys are happy about, you know, their state tax dollars being sent our way? Because, you know, honestly, Boston is the biggest gobbler of state dollars, by far none. And
Sure.
it, you know, don't get me wrong, 10% of the population, 50% GDP generator for New England, and definitely well over 50% for the state. We all understand that. But, you know, big cities like Quincy, you know, do quite well. You know, it's other tax dollars, it's not your tax dollars that are coming to Mass, to coming to Quincy, you know, from other parts of the state. So, you know, I mean, we're a big partner in state finances in terms of, you know, providing essential service money. And, you know, in the middle of the budget, we're hoping that there's be some space left, despite the fact that, you know, our projections are lower than it has been for 2 years on revenue. That we have a little space to get some more money back to local not-for-profit agencies that do good work, as well as some city related programs.
So yeah, QCAP's having their annual awards ceremony this evening, actually. Bethann Strollo is going to get an award for 40 years of service at QCAP.
Yeah, let's not make fun of Beth Ann. She might hurt me.
That's incredible achievement. So good for her.
Yeah, no, me and Beth Ann are trading some emails. No, congratulations to Beth Ann, obviously, as well as a number of folks that have done 25 plus years of service and 20, I think there's a 15, 20, and then you get to Beth Ann's 40. It's like a gulf to Beth Ann. And I've known Beth Ann, as I remind her every so often, from the days when she was helping administer the Head Start program.
Yes, sure, I remember it too.
When Rosemary Wahlberg at the time
Yeah.
thought for some reason some 20-something kid should sit on an advisory committee, the Head Start, and Michael Morrissey said it would be a good idea and a positive experience, which it turned out to be a very educational experience for 3 years, as
Sure
I
did.
sat on an advisory board that Rosemary put me on and introduced me heavily into human services. And that's how I met Beth Ann for the first time. And it's been this long friendship. And working both working and personal friendship for many, many years. So congratulations, Beth Ann. I'll restrain from being quippy on the matter. Let's put it that way.
And so other recognition, there's Eileen Liu has 30 years, Susan Keenan with 25, and Angela Goosen with 20 years of service. So good for them.
Yeah, well, it's good that we just don't point out the period of time that Beth Ann's been with us. Anyway,
Well,
now
she was only 10 when she started, Jackie.
I got my one quip in, okay?
Okay.
Beth Ann might hurt me later.
Hey, back to the budget for a sec. Does it tap into the rainy day fund at all? Does it use any of those funds? Do you know?
No, the rainy day fund is left alone. We
Oh,
have
okay.
on the edge of $9 billion, provided that the capital gains money makes projection.
Yeah.
No capital gain money is put into the baseline budget. We stopped that after the dot-com bust. And only revenue from capital gains goes into in any other surplus, but predominantly capital gain goes into rainy day fund. And the reason's because unpredictability, right? Capital gain is very unpredictable in revenue because it's driven by the stock market and home sales in particular. And that, you know, we felt that back in 03, after the 03 dot-com bust, because that really was like a weird one, you know, like 2001, 2, 3, 4, 5. It was kind of a strange recession. That's why I always refer to 03 bust because that was the worst year. The cap gains, you know, since in rainy day. And thankfully, we only had to do a few drawdowns during the 09 financial crisis, but you didn't really feel those impacts to 2009, 10, 11, 12, 13. And then, you know, there was a drawdown then, but it was a, you know, we were able to keep it from being drawn down to zero. And then since then, the economic situation improved. Obviously, cap gains and property transfers and sales improved. So as a result, we were able to build up that rainy day fund on capital gains. And you should reach $9 billion if the projections are correct. And that's why I'd be cautionary when you look at news reports. When they say reducing tax revenue, they don't tell you which part of the tax revenue.
Right.
So, and obviously, we always hope there'll be cap gains because if it's capital gains reduction, it just means rainy day reduction. It doesn't mean baseline spending budget problems. And you know, if there's a you know severe crisis, we can always draw from the rainy day to balance the budget when there's some kind of unforeseen emergency. And but thankfully, the past year and to the end of this year, we still have just enough ARPA money to cover some other emergency costs. But you know, come the end of 2024, you know, we will not have that availability. So, you know, we're making do by trying to keep our reserves fully intact, you know, when it was a true rainy day. And sadly, I've been around long enough to see really bad days. This is not good, but it's not horrific.
So no, actually, I think the rainy day fund for Massachusetts is one of the highest in the country.
Yeah, we are among the top five. I
Yeah.
mean, certain states such as Texas and Alaska, their reserve fund is based on oil. So a place like Alaska, for example, takes their oil money and it goes straight into rainy day. The drawback is that they're also oil dependent. So I remember that once the pandemic hit and people stopped driving, period, no one flew. You know, it was a complete decline in usage of fossil fuels. And they actually had the biggest budget shortfall of the country. They had like a 40% budget shortfall immediately because so much of the revenue is driven by oil movement because you know they tax or tax or pilot. We can call it whatever you want, but they get paid for the oil
Right, yeah.
through Alaska. So I mean in their rainy day fund would not be able to cover it. And they actually have a sovereign fund. Very rare a state has a sovereign fund. But Alaska is one of those states that has a completely separate fund that is not taxpayer a fund. It's oil money fund. And it's kind of well, not personal taxpayer, it's corporate oil money fund. And
Yeah.
then that money set aside as a major investment for the for Alaska they could draw from perhaps later on. But I mean yeah so I'm doing an aside again as you can tell. But I remember looking at a first set of charts from a national council of state governments regarding you know the impact of 2020 COVID and we're like ooh this isn't good for us. Then we went down the list of who got smacked the hardest and we got to like Alaska 40% immediate decline in revenue. I was like wow.
Yeah,
I mean
that's
things were good here but we weren't Alaska.
right. Exactly. Yeah. Wow. I didn't know that. Interesting. Okay.
Yeah, that kind of jumped out at you when you looked at the chart.
Be happy you're not a state rep in Alaska, Tacky.
Well, back in 2020, obviously, that's
Then, right. Exactly.
very,
Yeah.
very special. You obviously now that we're back to some reality and you've noticed the price of oil It's a futures kind of thing. It's floating in between 80 and $90. It may tip close to 100 if global geopolitics don't stabilize in Ukraine, as well as the Middle East.
Let's talk a little bit about, we promised we would talk about this, the new electricity program in Quincy. Have you got your letter?
Yes, my mom got her letter this week, so I went over my mom, it is a significant savings from the basic service. I did some fast math. If you take the city's automatic, you will be enrolled in if you do not say anything, you save about 24.2% against the basic service. And if you do the basic service, which you have to enroll into, your savings 26.5% against current basic service. And take the green power because you want 100% green, you get 19.1% savings against basic service. Mind you, basic service, that which is the utility national grid in our case, electrical generation cost, does fluctuate every 6 months. And the city will lock you into December 2027. However, you can get out of the municipal aggregation at no charge and no fee. But I like to point out definitely that the basic service does provide a little bit more savings than the standard service, and you do have to make the call. So I actually did do the phone call for my mom, called Entergy, which is the suppliers, the number on the paper we got, on the letter we got, and they got set, called it in, and the person was very nice, and he actually was very straight up. We're getting phone calls from your state, and we're not doing well on trying to do these transfers, but we're going to give it a try. So he tried it, had some challenges, sent me, said I'm going to refer to a Massachusetts office, which then scratches their head. Why isn't the phone number calling a Massachusetts office? So then reaches out, very nice person, went through the home same process, and again, did not was able to do a transfer. So they sent me to yet another office and a third transfer, which was able to go through the process and was able to provide us to go on to basic service. You have to get your account number from National Grid. They have to verify your identity. And obviously, they have to verify your permission to do the transfer because you're the bill holder, which is the case as my mother. My mom was with me, so they could hear my mom. And then they actually, once they complete the process, they actually do another confirmation to make it clear to you that this is just energy. National Grid still does your distribution. They're not responsible for the wires. Are you aware they're not, res you're not responsible? They are not responsible for the wires. They have some ability they can get out with no fee. They actually have to go through these questions at the very end to confirm what their responsibility is, what your responsibility is, which is also reflected in the letter provided by the city. And then you do a survey at the end regarding customer service. So it was three different people to get me to transfer from the standard service to the basic service for my mother, which was fine. People weren't difficult at all, very polite. Hopefully the future, they'll only require one individual to help you and not three.
Yes, because folks that don't have somebody like you to advocate for them could get lost in the shuffle, unfortunately.
Yeah, and if you're not a native language speaker of English, it could be somewhat challenging. And then, given the city is more than 25% ish folks that come from other countries, give or take, English as first language is actually not uncommon in Quincy. So we'll read the rates really quickly for you. The National Grid rate, which is what you're paying now, is 18.213 cents. The rate that if you don't do anything, meaning you don't do anything at all, and the city automatically put onto it, is 13.804 cents. And then if you move on to the basic, which is what my experience I just went through, is 13.394 cents. And the Quincy premium is the one that's totally renewable power. That's 14.737 cents. So, it's point. Under 0.5 cents per kilowatt differential between the basic service and the city standard service you default on. But again, it depends if you want to have some renewable energy in it, or do you just want 100% savings, which is no additional cost. There is a disclaimer by the city and is a correct disclaimer that the basic service that National Grid is unpredictable because it's a very 6 month variable rate. Let's say the price of oil drops to $50 a barrel. Somehow peace happens on the planet suddenly before the next big process in July. This basic rate could be down to substantially lower than the city rate if there's a massive reduction in oil supply. I'm sorry, reduction in world peace and oil supply is plentiful in oil. And then you have a reduction in energy prices because a lot of energy prices are still very much tied to fossil fuels.
And if that does happen by some strange coincidence, you can opt out of the Quincy program and go back to National Grid, right?
But again, once you're out. So I'd say that when you do energy, it's not looking at a snapshot of 6 months or 1 year. It's really kind of a glide path of a totality of the time of the contract you're in. So in this case, looking at December 27, 2027, under municipal aggregation. So you're looking at kind of like what you think the energy price would be on the average of the totality of the time period, not just a snapshot every 6 months.
Oh, I didn't know that. I thought you could just flip-flop back and forth at will.
No, it's I don't no, you're out. I mean,
Okay.
I don't believe you can get back in because it kind of defeats the point of municipal aggregation as it's not a competitive supply.
Okay, that's good to know, actually. So
But
you're out until the next contract, I guess, in 2027.
well, I would be very cautious. I'll caution you this. It's other places don't do let you back in. I will say that the city is not entirely clear in its letter or its website, which is QuincyCEA.com, QuincyCEA.com, exactly what happened. So I'm just telling you based on experience of other communities, not necessarily the Quincy ones. So I am putting an asterisk regarding my statement here.
Okay. All right.
But Quincy CEA.com is the state is the city website on this. And I'll give you a state website as well, energyswitchma.gov. Energyswitchma.gov is a way for you to compare energy prices around the state on competitive supply if you desire to do your own choice and put some time and effort in, same as looking for a cell phone provider, for example. It does list all the companies, not all, but probably almost all. So I'll give you an example. I mean, I'm looking, bringing up the website now, put in the zip code. The cheapest one that comes up right away is, let's see here. The first one on my list is Think Energy. However, the first 7 months is 10.270 for new customers only. Sounds like a cell phone plan, right?
Does, yeah.
10.270 kilowatt hours for the first 7 months. And then you have to read the rest for the details.
Okay.
Let's go to something that's a little longer here. Let's find one that's a little bit longer than 6 months. Here you go, 12 months.
12 months in.
Clearview Energy, 12-month guarantee. There is a cancellation fee and automatic renew. That's 12.59 cents. I'm not advocating for you to do this. I'm doing it as an example.
It's a
Isn't
public service, folks. Yes.
Public power, 18 months, 12.990 cents. There is a
Okay.
cancellation fee. There is automatic renew. Automatic renew again is one of those little things that is a real problem a lot of us are having. These also 62% requirement for renewable product, meaning that under the law they have to have 62% of energy to sell to you. Then you get to some of the more pricier, and I'll go to an expensive one for you guys. If you want to get to the pricier side, 100% renewable power. 100% renewable power is discount power. All renewable, 12-month fixed costs, no cancellation fee, automatic renewal for new customers only is 19.9 cents. So,
Okay.
for example, the city municipal aggregation now is much cheaper, 14 cents and change versus the 19 cents plus for discount power. Alpha Gas and Electric also provides 100% renewable for 24 months and 19 cents. So, if you want to do like 100% renewable power, you would do much better of the city overall. And then, but like I say, you could get probably cheaper power, perhaps. than basic service, but the contract won't be fixed as long as the city. And then
Right.
you have to go shopping between 6 months and 18 months for a new contract to avoid the auto renew, and there's a cancellation fee.
Yeah.
So again, this website, I'll repeat again, is energyswitchma.gov. Consumers can go in and take a look and see what may work for you. I am not advocating for any company. I just tell you my personal experience. But definitely go to the state website there on energyswitchma.gov, as well as quincycea.com, to look at the Minnesota aggregation. I believe you have to, like, mid-May, I think May 15th, something, to make a decision on opting out or changing your service, because once you're locked into the standard service, or if you want the renewable energy or the basic service, you're locked into that service to 2027 December. And again, you're thinking about this not in terms of short term. You got to think of this as kind of like that's time period. So you feel you can do better on the competitive supply on your own. Now you guys have a baseline to look at based on the city's municipal for 3 years, almost more than 3 years. If you feel that you can do it better on your own, like shopping for cell phones or cable TV, or now streaming services, you're welcome to try to figure it out. If you feel that this is a good price for you as an average user, then stay with it. And if you feel that you can take your risk on basic service for every 6 month variable, well, you got that option too.
Yes, but the devil really is in the details. If you want to shop on your own, though, you got to read that fine print and know about cancellation fees and automatic renewals, because you can get caught in a trap.
Absolutely. I mean, like I said, it looks very similar to cell phones in that sense. I'm not saying it's the same, but in the sense of, auto renews as well as cancellation fees. I mean, you have that problem there. But also, unlike a cell phone service, when you do the auto renew, it also changes the price. So you're not locked in that price. You're locked in the price for the months provided. And then the auto renew will be the new price that's put out. But you got to know it's coming, and you got to be ready for it. And I think that's kind of an interesting thing, because believe it or not, your cell phone bill has gone up a bit because of inflation. The base price hasn't, but a lot of taxes and fees have, service fees, quote unquote, have been added on to it, right? And this is upsetting a lot of folks, including myself. But I mean, that's something telecom companies can do. In the case of energy companies, when they get to auto renew, they don't do that kind of extra fee stuff. The rate is the rate is the rate, but the rate will change at the end of your term of your contract. And before your contract terminates, you should find another supplier before termination. And I think we have a bad habit of waiting to, like, last possible second to make decisions. Really, it's just how we are as
Of
people.
course, that's we're just human, right? That's what we
Yeah.
do.
So, I mean, obviously, in the case, that's why competitive supply energy is a little different approach. You have to, it's like terminating your lease agreement when you, if you have rent, right? You don't want to wait to the day it terminates to make it determine what you're going to do. You have to think about it going into the end of your lease agreement, what your plan is. Energy supply is kind of like a cell phone in the sense that it has a similar type program in terms of trying to buy stuff because they're trying to incentivize you. On the flip side, once you're in, you got to think of this more as kind of a lease agreement. As you close and end the lease, you should really be making decisions about what you're going to do next.
Yeah, I actually go to my paper wall calendar and physically write like a week before it's due to renew to remind myself. That way it gives me at least a week to figure it out.
Yeah, absolutely. And like I said, also kind of supply creates a little confusion, folks, because those who have never done this before, the billing is a little odd, right? So you have the distribution charge, plus you have the energy charge, which is two separated charges. Distribution is the wire, energy is the stuff in the wire. And then you have to kind of pay some attention. So I don't think it sounds more burdensome than it is when I say it out loud, but it really is that when you think about your day-to-day lives and the fact that you already do a lot of this stuff, you just never think about the context of doing it with energy. That's all.
Yeah, right. It's new in Quincy, that's all, right? But it's not new in the state. It's, I think 170 other towns are already doing it, so.
Yes. And again, it creates also a competitive situation with competitive supply companies because they will know what the municipal aggregate is. So it also encourages competition, for folks that are competing now, not just against the basic service, but also municipal aggregation and against each other. And again, the consumer choice is that you have a lot of options available. As I said before, the mandatory 62% minimum is the state requirement for renewable energy for all power. And then, if you want to go to 100%, You can do that. And you guys can wait it out. As I gave you a website, you can kind of look at some of the basics. Again, it's not devil in the details, always in the details, folks. You got to look into it. And same thing is here. As I said before earlier, my experience has always been once you opt out of municipal energy, you can't get back in, but I could be wrong. And these are good questions they should ask the city and ask Entergy about. As you can tell, I was not a participant in this process, but I did read a letter and I did go through the process to get my mom into basic service.
Yeah, that's good. I want to talk about the economy a little bit.
Yeah, GDP numbers came out today below estimate. I believe the number was 1.8. The expectation, I'm sorry, 1.6, even worse. The estimate was 2.4. So GDP numbers came in real at much smaller than expected. 2.4 estimate versus 1.6 is a giant leap down. Consumer spending, because we're 70% plus consumer spending state, 50% all businesses or small businesses, I'm sorry, in the country, 7% of spending GDP is driven by consumer spending in this country. And then more than 50% of our businesses are small businesses in this country. Most people don't realize that. This is not a good sign. It is a slowing economy, but unemployment rate remains under 4%. So layoffs aren't happening en masse. But wage growth has slowed down, but it's still higher than it has been. And this morning I heard that if the next month's unemployment rate stays under 4%, it'll break the streak for the longest period of time. Unemployment has been under 4% nationally,
Wow.
not since the 60s, post-World War II. So it's well, actually. Not well, the 50s, you had a very economic boom. So that's why unemployment was really low. But I mean, it ended in the 60s. So it's kind of one of those interesting situations which the president's going to get zero credit for. And it's going to cause all kinds of economists trying to analyze how the economy may be down the road. So consumer spending is the biggest slowdown on the GDP driving this number down. And we do buy import local import from out of this country, and we buy local. And it seems that people are buying less imports. And I don't think it's because entirely because of buying want to buy more local, because that's not the indication either. Consumer spending is,
Right.
but I think it's really down to the price. And the US dollar is extremely strong still, as strong as it needs to be on a global stage. And when our dollar is strong, our import our exports are expensive, and our imports generally work out better for us because we'll get a better price because our dollar is stronger than the importer's product.
Right.
The fact that weaker lower price import because of a strong dollar is not encouraging more spending, is generally not a good sign with what's going on. But again, it's one quarter. The Atlanta Fed's still expecting a good overall 2024. But yeah, the warning signs I've talked about over and over again. I mean, how much longer can the consumer keep this up?
No, it's true, and it's probably going to impact interest rates staying where they are for a while.
Yeah, the long bond, the 10-year bond was sitting at trading at 4.7%. The 2-year bond was at 4.9% and fluctuating rate at 5. These two bond rates are crucial regarding things like determining your mortgage rates, short-term loans in the sense, 2 to 5 year loans. And it's still this weird inverse yield curve where you're getting paid back more in the short run as opposed to the long run. Generally, the idea is that if you leave your money longer for lending, if you're lending money to someone, you should get more money back for the long term, not the short term. But right now, the short term is giving you more money than the long term by percentage against dollar. So yeah, it's still messed up. I mean, and we've been in this position for well into almost actually well over 2 years now in this weird kind of like long short term problem. And your mortgages, you guys all see your mortgage rates are 7, 8%. And if something doesn't change and the Fed's not going to be encouraged to cut rates per se, it's a very here's the problem the Feds have. GDP 1.6 shows the economy slowing down. Unemployment rate is still abnormally low at under 4%, right? Consumer CPI and PCE, which is the two big indicators of spending, consumer price index and the personal core spending, those two numbers, are still over 3%. I mean, it's still sitting at 3 in CPI, and it's at 3.74% for core PCE, which is discounting energy and housing. So the Feds are trying to get to 2%, particularly on PCE, and there's no cooperation. But consumer spending, seems to be slowing down, and is slowing down. That seems is slowing down in quarter one GDP. So you got all these conflicting numbers, right? Things are expensive. Things about energy and housing is still expensive. Growth is slowing somewhat in the total economy. Unemployment's low. Interest rates are high. People are still buying and building homes. People are still spending, but they're changing their spending habits. And it's like a whole convoluted like mess. And wages are still growing, but not growing at a very fast pace like it did a year and a half ago. So the Federal Reserve has got all these conflicting numbers because, if things are bad in the economy, they all go bad together. But things are good in the economy, all goes good together. Generally, they all kind of like, drag each other along, going up or down the economic scale. So, this talk about, Fed's cutting rates, down from the 5.25 to 5.5 range to bring it down, quarter point, or maybe bring it down to 0.75%, drop it 0.75 end of the year. It isn't looking very likely now. It's very confusing because they read the GDP number as weak economy. Maybe they should cut rates to start, propping up spending by, trying to create better lending opportunities. But on the flip side, the other side of the numbers show that inflation is still too high and employment is very high. So they're really in a bind down there at the Federal Reserve because you got all these conflicting economic numbers. You can talk to all the talking heads you want on any news channel, regardless of which, channel you pick. But it's very unpredictable economy, and it affects you and me, and not just price at the pump or price buying food, but also impacts the state tax revenues, and it also affects consumer spending on things like meals taxes, right? The meals tax, out of state people pay extra on hotel taxes. Most of us domestically do not pay hotel taxes in Massachusetts. I mean, some of us probably do. We're going to travel inside the state, but the vast majority of folks are out of state. They're using things like car rentals, Massport, using regional airports, using the hotels, and also the meals taxes and sales tax. A lot of tourists come in, and how much money nationally and internationally they have in your pocket determines their ability to come to Massachusetts. And we got the big schools. The big schools automatically make tourism. So, yeah, I have no idea what's happening. I just know I've been part of my job at this committee chair is to pay attention to this stuff. It's very perplexing.
What do you make of the kerfuffle with the state transportation secretary suggesting tolls at Massachusetts, New Hampshire border?
Well, you gotta love the governor's statement the next day, which says that was unauthorized. We're not doing this, and we have complete confidence on something she said she was wrong.
But like, I just picture giant skid marks in the governor's office. Put
Well,
the brakes on that.
I'm right on my phone, folks. Those who can't see me on TV and now watch me look down at my phone, see if I can find the quote that I found most perplexing on this whole thing.
It was kind of a, it was, I reject that idea, but I support her fully, basically.
Yeah, it's let's see if we can scroll over here. Let me do this. Scroll. I get way too many. I reject everything the secretary has said. And I'll put some dots in because that works. I reject everything the secretary said, dot, dot, dot. She has my complete confidence. So, I mean, that's basically what she says. So I'll read you the tweet. Governor Healey's, this is actually from Lisa Kaczynski. Let's give that credit. Lisa at Lisa Lisa Kaczynski's text Twitter X thing inbox. Governor Maura Healey says her transportation secretary border toll suggestions, quote, do not represent the views of the administration. And to be clear, I'm not proposing tolls or at any border quotation. She said she's quotation, made it clear, quotation, to the secretary has quotation confidence in her leadership, quotations. So short answer is, I kind of said that, I reject everything that she said, but she has my complete confidence.
Yeah, I think
That's my summary.
the new secretary needs to realize that whenever you're speaking in public, you're speaking to the public.
Yeah, so let's make sure I give that credit to Lisa Kaczynski's ex tweet. I don't know, what do we call these things anymore? But yeah, I mean, the answer is, folks, no, we're not doing any border tolls. And if she wants to change the excess tax, she has to talk to us. And as far as I'm aware of, there is no appetite in this place for taxes. So I don't believe the speaker has an appetite for it. I can't speak for the Senate, but I'll give you another funny one since we're going to do this anyways. You guys know Ricky Candid, Scott Van Voorhis. I don't know if you're Scott Van Voorhis. He was a Boston, I believe Boston Herald business editor. He has a newsletter called The Contrarian in Boston. You can subscribe to it if you care to. And I'll give credit to Scott Van Voorhis for this one, regarding the fact that Karen spoke at the Senate president. Actually said something about the fact she has proposed barter tolls in the past. So
Okay.
you need a little context, right? So Karen Spoker is from Framingham Natick in Metro West. So obviously, if you're a Metro West legislator, you have to do the turnpike.
Oh, right, of course. Yep.
And all those Metro West legislators don't like tolls in the turnpike. Big surprise,
Right.
right? So they feel sometimes, I'm not saying everyone, I'm saying the Senate president in this case, feels that what's good is for the goose is good for the gander.
Ah, okay.
So why don't we toll the borders like they do in New Hampshire?
Yeah, interesting.
Because they have to live with tolls on the Mass Pike, and the Senate president does. So that's kind of where that logic comes from, in case you're wondering.
Okay.
Your Metro West and going westbound on the toll structure. They look at us living in the South Shore without tolls, going up and down the expressway. They look at us like, why don't you guys have to do what we do, right? So, but that's where the Senate, that's a context for the Senate president's comments. Again, that's Scott Van Voorhis from the Contrarian in Boston who put that out.
Okay. Why are there still tolls in the turnpike anyway? I thought that was all paid for.
It's maintenance.
Ah,
So,
yes, the old maintenance tax.
yeah, it's actually kind of interesting. So, I don't know how many people listen to actually use the turnpike like a lot in the last 30 years. But one of the things that actually happened is that once, well, there's multiple issues. One of the things that happened is once we stopped putting the tolls directly into the turnpike, there's no longer a Mass Turnpike Authority that oversaw the toll money. And it got put into the General Fund for Transportation Trust Fund for all the transportation. The Mass Pike quality road is actually not as good as it used to be. Those who paid tolls and remember drove it a long time, who had a lot of experience on turnpike, may remember that the best road in the state was the turnpike, by far and none, because the tolls went all back into the turnpike, including snow removal, damage repair, new construction. It was not part of the state taxpayer dollars. It was contained within the turnpike. Bonds were leveraged against the tolls. And then same thing regarding the Big Dig. The tolls we used to leverage as the loan for the Big Dig, because Wall Street wants guaranteed funds. We actually used the Turnpike's reserve account as the collateral for the loans for the Big Dig, which obviously now stretches to Logan Airport. So there was a big push to eliminate Turnpike authority because it's considered political patronage and the politically good punching bag. The fact that no one likes the Turnpike Authority on the whole. And it was dissolved eventually during the Mitt Romney into the Deval Patrick administrations. And then they didn't take the tolls down because we have to pay for the Big Dig because that's how we're paying for the Big Dig. And any extra money that is there goes to the Transportation Trust Fund, which is distributed through the whole state.
Okay, all right.
Yeah. Obviously, I've used the Pike, you've used the Pike. It isn't like I'm a regular Pike user. But if you live in, the Metro West area going down to the Berkshires and you're a regular user of the Turnpike, they've all observed over the last 15 years or so, the Pike road quality isn't what it used to be. It's because they're not getting a lot of money.
Okay.
So you and I that are non-Turnpike users are directly benefiting from the fact that a portion of that money has gone to the Transportation Trust Fund for
Gotcha.
overall infrastructure for the state.
Yeah, okay. So it's just the pie is cut into much smaller pieces.
Honestly, if you're living on the Turnpike and you hated the Turnpike Authority, well, you got what you wanted in the sense it's gone.
Right.
Tolls didn't go with it. On the flip side, if you want a nice Turnpike, you should have kept all the money inside the Turnpike and not let it leave.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, it's, I mean, that's why New Hampshire roads, the interstates are so nice.
Well, yeah, because also they don't take Fed money.
Right.
Connecticut and New Hampshire actually are not compliant federal roads because of this, there's a compliance component. And you actually have to take federal infrastructure money during the Eisenhower administration to qualify for federal assistance on those same roads. So neither of that nor do they want to do lane compliance. So certain roads in both states are not federal assistance. So things like tolls are crucial in places like New Hampshire because they have no other revenue source, they have no income tax. And as a result, this becomes a bit of a challenge. I will say that in Massachusetts, we did actually also take advantage of this through Tip O'Neill and Ronald Reagan and Ted Kennedy, because they're the ones who was able to get the big funding because the old overpass expressway, you may remember that scary green overpass expressway, was actually built before the Eisenhower Transportation Infrastructure Act. That was built before that. So it never qualified for federal funds, the big dig.
Oh,
So, but
interesting.
it took, Ted Kennedy, Tip O'Neill, and Ronald Reagan to work out an agreement to funnel money from the feds into the big dig project.
Okay. A little history here from Techie.
Well, I mean, back when you could actually cooperate in Congress and
Yeah,
do.
I'm a Republican president and a Democratic legislature getting together.
Yeah, and like work on like one of the biggest infrastructure projects in the country.
Yeah, it was like $11 billion, I think, something like that.
At the time, well, I think it
Yeah,
was
at
$3 billion when he started at the time. It
the time. Yeah.
ballooned to 13 plus billion, and I think it got a little more than that at one point.
I think you're right. Yeah.
The problem with these estimates is they were using dollars from day gone by. So, I mean, estimates are the estimates, but you got to estimate from 1988. It's not the same price in, 1998. And
Right.
that's been the problem on these construction projects is because they only know what they know then. They can't figure out what's going to be now. And we're living an example of that. People had a construction projects planned in 2019. Hyperinflation hits now 2024. Your estimated price in 1919 was based on the prices you knew then.
Oh yeah, it's the Quinns, new Quinns police station is a perfect example of that. Yep.
Absolutely correct. So this is causing havoc in the sense that the last several years, as we talked about earlier about inflation, not necessarily just for major construction, but also for home projects.
Absolutely. Yep. We gotta go, Jackie. I know you have to go. You're looking at your screen
Yeah,
there.
for those who can see me glancing to the side, I do have a small television to the left side, actually monitoring debate from my office, and I just see the word roll call in progress.
Okay. All right. So we got it in. We managed to get it in during budget debate. How about
Yeah, 617-722-2370, 617-722-3370. We're in office today, obviously, room 42 of the State House. We are at tacky.chan at mahouse.gov. My staff is saying I can't get out of here. State Representative Tacky Chan, Facebook, MELegislature.gov, tackychan.org, at tackychan.x. And of course, we can talk to Joe Catalano anytime you want. Email him if you got a problem.
Okay. Thanks, Tacky. Thank you, staff. We'll talk to you next week.
All right. Thank you, Joe. Talk to you next week.